Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dignity Memorial. When your celebration of life is prepaid today, your family is protected tomorrow. Planning ahead is truly one of the best gifts you can give your family. For additional information, visit dignitymemorial.com.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Bobby Moynihan was just a kid when he first tried out for Saturday Night Live. And by that, I mean he had his mom go get the camcorder. She did her best Don Pardo impression as a very young Bobby opened the door for the bathroom in a fancy suit. That video did not get him the job. In fact, they didn't even submit it to Lorne and the team. They probably just showed it to some aunts and uncles. And also, you know, teenage Eddie Murphy aside, Saturday Night Live, not really a show for kids. But as you probably know, Bobby Moynihan eventually did get on Saturday Night Live. He starred on the show for nearly a decade. He did some impressions, but his strength was portraying offbeat characters, ones not necessarily rooted in the headlines of the day. Just lovable doofuses that only Moynihan could play. Like maybe his most popular, Drunk Uncle.
When I was a kid, $5, you could get hot dog, milk, bread, cigarettes, television. Nowadays, is this gluten-free?
Moynihan left the show in 2017. He did some voice acting. He's appeared on shows like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and in movies like The Secret Life of Pets. Recently, he played Jaden Kwapis on the sitcom Mr. Mayor. He's also started writing. There's Loafy, a series of shorts about a cartoon drug-dealing manatee. Lightning Wolves, which launched earlier this year on Comedy Central's YouTube. It's an adult send-up of late 20th century animated shows like Captain Planet and Transformers.
The Omniverse has called on me, us, for protection for our home planet of cell toys. Lightning Wolves, combine. Whee!
And now Bobby Moynihan has a picture book. Not All Sheep Are Boring is about sheep. And how sheep actually live rich, interesting lives with hobbies like drinking coffee or metal detecting or pasta eating. Well, I mean, maybe not all sheep lead rich, interesting lives. Some sheep are just sheep. We'll talk more about it later. I'm really thrilled to get to talk with Bobby Moynihan for the show. Let's get into it. Bobby Moynihan, welcome to Bullseye. It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you want to write a children's book?
Why not? You know?
Yeah, sure. I think there's probably children's...
All right, I'll see you later.
Children's book authors right now who are listening and they're like, it's my life.
Son of a... No, I wanted to write a story. I had a story in my head and I wrote it down and I want my daughter to read it someday.
How old's your daughter?
5.
When I read kids' books with my kids, the youngest of whom is now 5, I found myself getting really mad at children's books for being bad because kids will just accept that because they haven't read any other books. But then I also had the feeling like when I would read a good one, I would be like, this is the greatest thing in history.
Yeah, it's that too. It's knowing that you'll be a part of something really special. I mean, like, I think we all have, hopefully, we all have, like, I remember my mom reading me Richard Scarry's bedtime books, and the last line of the book was, wait a minute, I gotta go get a glass of water. I remember, you know, it was like a thing that, like, I did with my mom before we went to bed as something I hold dear. And, like, the fact that you could create something that could make another family do that is nuts. It's a fun, interesting thing.
Did you read it to kids when you were writing it?
No. It's funny. I'm realizing now I don't think I've read it to a child yet.
That's chutzpah.
Yeah.
Do you think prospectively that the gags will work?
Yeah, I hope. Yeah, I mean, like they. Yeah, yeah.
Who doesn't love a Caps for Sale parody?
Yeah, I'm not even sure what that is. Caps for Sale?
There's a page in your book that is a parody of the book Caps for Sale. You know, caps for sale, 50 cents a cap. And then the monkeys steal his caps. And then he shakes his fist at them and they shake their fist at him. And it's the tree from Caps. They're one of the sheep in your book. Loves
yeah,
hats.
Yeah, no, I don't know the reference, but yeah, just a sheep that loves hats. Just the whole joke is that all sheeps are, I'm saying that all, I mean, the whole joke to me was not all sheep are boring, but I'm saying they kind of are. Like you start off going like, oh, this one's interesting. And then as the book goes on, the sheep get more boring. And then the frog falls asleep.
Did you have like a file in your phone that was... types of sheep you had thought of?
No, I had the idea. I thought it was funny of people count sheep to fall asleep, and why is that? And I just thought, you know, sheep are boring, and I thought it would be funny to start explaining that, you know, not all sheep are boring, and then to realize at the end that they were, and I was wrong, and I felt the toad, who's the narrator, falls asleep because he's wrong, and he puts himself to sleep because sheep are so boring.
Do you have a favorite sheep that you created for the book?
Sure. Pierre is, I just like the idea of, there's one named Pierre who we don't talk about. He's hiding behind a tree. He has some secrets.
I did like the one with secrets. About Pierre.
I didn't realize that you had seen it, so I had no idea. I didn't know anyone had seen it. Also, by the way, it's crazy. I'm realizing now all I do is silly improv podcasts. So I came in very underprepared. I was like ready to be insane. And it feels I forget that this is like a real interview show.
I'm known as the Scott Aukerman of public radio.
Congratulations.
I expected you to come in here and do a character while I'm vaguely hostile to it.
I think what I'm realizing is that's all I do. That's all I do is show up and say, hi, I'm Batman. and then be crazy for an hour. I very rarely go like, oh, you read a book that I wrote? Oh, no, I wrote the book in my bathroom one day. Like, that's what I did over the pandemic. It was fun. I tried to write all day and ended up in a bathroom writing.
I feel like Aukerman's yes and is more of like a, no.
But that's the whole fun of that show, is it's just insane. Like, it's my favorite place to go because you could just be very silly. It's silly wins at Comedy Bang Bang, at least in my experience.
I mean, I think that there are a lot of your characters, not just on the silly comedy podcast, Comedy Bang Bang, but also on Saturday Night Live, that are basically excuses for you to be goofy and silly. Yeah. Like, there are some with more, like, some have more concept than others. Some have more sort of specific jokes than others. But mostly it's just a setup for you to go like, do-do-do-do-do in some ridiculous way.
I think I just like playing people who are having a good time, even if they maybe shouldn't be, or they're happy. I like playing by people who are living their life.
Is that aspirational for you or representational? Like, do you think that's what you're like in real life?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I think so. I feel like Seth Meyers said to me once, like, and I just remember thinking like that was a real piece of advice that I should remember in this moment, was he was just like, whenever you personally are having like a blast, people love it. And I was just like, I feel like that to me was something that no one had ever really said that to me. And I went like, yeah, like, I feel like that's when I'm at my best too, is like when I would be having a blast with him doing Drunk Uncle. And like, I got to improvise a little, which like you're not allowed to do, but it was like, because you did it with Seth, Daddy said it's okay. Like, so like that, him saying that offhanded sentence to me one night behind the update desk during a rehearsal, and I just went like, oh, Okay, maybe if I do that.
I mean, there is something about Saturday Night Live that carries that really well because it's so, you know, the reason the show is live is because it, you know, it reinforces that fresh connection between the audience and the performers that, like, everyone is in this crazy thing that the cast is trying to do, which is do 7,000 sketches in a row over 90 minutes live on television that they've prepared over the course of 6 days. And, like, there's a certain amount to which just having the audience rooting for you and having a nice time with you is essential.
It was also currency, and, like, you also needed it there. I mean, like, it was a place where, like, that when that was happening, when you were killing, that's you were contributing.
Now you sound scared.
Because I it's funny, I don't talk about SNL that much anymore. And I've been away from it for so long now, 5 years, and, like, I have a daughter, and it's so different that it's – and I've had a lot of therapy. So, like, it's very I'm in a very different place with it. So it's – when I start to think about it, I think about it a lot differently now.
In what way?
It meant everything at the time. It was everything. I had wanted it my whole life, and then I was there, and I was in it, and it was hard to process, and everything was going on, and I was in love and getting married and a lot of other stuff. And then the second it ended, it was like life kicked in, and I got married. I had a kid and, like, all that. So to look it back now at 5 years and go, like, oh, it was a job. Like, it was a job that I had, and, like, and to now just look at it in a completely different light is crazy. And I don't know if crazy is the right word. It's so much less crazy now than it was then to me. But it's also 1,000,000,000% more crazy because it. I saw a video recently of a guy. You see a guy. I'm not sure where it is, but it's like a real foggy day. And he's going across one of those, like, it's like a glass bridge or like a suspension bridge that has, like, wood planks, and it's just rope, and it's super, super, super high up. And he's got a harness. It's like one of these things you do where you put a harness on and you.
I don't like do those
tourist,
things.
Well, a tourist thing, like, you know, yeah. Where you, like, run across this bridge and it's like it's super, super high up. And he does it. But right as he gets to the other end, he realizes he's not clipped in. So his safety harness was never clipped in, and he just ran across it without even thinking, and he makes it across, but then he's not clipped in, and he's kind of like, oh, I made it. And, like, that's how I saw that, and I was like, that's how I feel. I was like, I look back, excuse me, I look back now, and I just, like, I if I see anything with it now, I see a little kid who was just running full speed through his Toys R Us shopping spree that he won. And now I think back and I go, like, that was crazy. Like, I can't believe I made it out okay.
Even more still to come with Bobby Moynihan. When we come back from a quick break, we will talk about what life is like after the pressure cooker of Saturday Night Live. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. With thousands of options under $20,000, plus customizable financing terms and down payments as low as $0 down, it's easy to find a car that fits your lifestyle. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today. Terms and conditions may apply.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Bobby Moynihan. Bobby is, of course, a veteran of Saturday Night Live. He starred on that show between 2008 and 2017. He's also been on shows like Mr. Mayor, DuckTales, and Nature Cat. He just published his first ever picture book. It's called Not All Sheep Are Boring. It's out now. Let's get back into our conversation. Most folks that I know who are doing sketch and improv as, you know, 20-year-olds and 28-year-olds, it's because their life is built around the dream of what if I got on Saturday Night Live. You got on Saturday Night Live And then you have to figure out, and Saturday Night Live is all consuming. And then you have to figure out, like,
navigating the rest of your life after that, which was the insane hard part. Yeah.
If I'm not just ambition and then being in a maelstrom of having achieved this dream.
It's funny. Seth Meyers, another thing I remember him saying, which was the night my last, oh, I don't know if you want to call it that, but like I did ASCAT right before like the week, the Sunday before my first SNL. And he just offhandedly was just like, oh, welcome now to just like the rest of your life, just slights for the rest of your, the tiny slights for the rest of your life. And just always being Saturday Night Live's blank. And it was just like, that's it. For the rest of your life, you are Saturday Night Live's Bobby Moynihan. That's for no matter what you do, that's how you'll be introduced for the rest of your life. And like he said that, and I was like, he's absolutely right. And no matter what, I'm here to promote a book. I will talk about SNL the whole time. And it's all I want to talk about. Well, all I wanted to talk about when I was a kid. Now, it's funny to be at a point now, even when I was on SNL, it's all I wanted to talk about. And it's crazy to be at a point where I'm like, I'm okay not talking about it so much. But like at the same time, it just changes. It changes.
Was it your live stream?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I have videos of me as a little kid dressed up in a suit, hiding in the bathroom and my mom going, Bobby Moynihan, and me like coming out of the bathroom and like pretending to do like SNL opens. I told Lorne that, and he was like, I don't care. He was like, weird. But like, yeah. Like I would listen to it on the bus. Like I would tape the audio of the 25th anniversary and just listen to like that audio tape on the bus. I think I was just a comedy fan or just like weird fan. Liked weird more than anything.
I want to play one Saturday Night Live sketch. I didn't want to just do Bobby Moynihan's Saturday Night Live greatest hits, but this is one that I really loved, which is it's this guy whose name is, I did not know, I had forgotten his real name, his full name, which is Kirby J. Buttercream. But he is a spaceman on a spaceship, and all he talks about is missing his cat.
Yeah. The J stands for Jellicle.
So this is them trying to land the spaceship, I think, on Mars.
Kirby, O2 levels.
I miss my little kitty cat. Sometimes I'll put a little hat on him and pretend he's a little man. My little businessman. And then I give him a little kiss. A little business kiss.
Kirby, I need you to get your head in the game, okay, son? We got a lot of prep before we sit down on that big red rock, and I need you to focus.
Copy that, Captain. I just miss my little kitty cat.
It's so dumb. I was watching it and imagining you like at a table read having to sell it to a bunch of just like with that, like you desperately want to just say, and then I'll act dumb, but actually you have to do it.
Yeah, no, I did it on TV.
Doing it live on TV television somehow seems easier to me.
Oh, you're 100% right. It's much easier to do the show than table read. But yeah, no, I like doing weird stuff like that.
I love that so much. You said that you only realize now what you learned on Saturday Night Live that you can use in your career now. What were those things? What's one of those things that you realized you learned?
I learned that I'm a much more professional actor than I thought. I think I always have said like, oh, I'm just a silly idiot. And like that, I think I like did that. But like now I'm starting to realize I'm not, and I'm an adult who went through this business and did a lot of crazy things and came out on the other end. And that I have more confidence in myself as a professional, you know, act. It's not show up. I can't just show up and half-ass. You know, a lot of times I'm at a job and I have to remind myself, I'm like, you're not at SNL. You were there 10 years. This is not those people, you know, like you can't act the way you maybe acted there sometimes, you know, like it's like it got very easy to work at a place where you got very comfortable. But yeah, I think now it's like it's funny to just like show up, do your job and go home and like feel confident about it. And like, you know, just I don't know. I learned. It's hard to say it out loud. I think I learned like, oh, I'm better than I thought, meaning like or I learned a lot more than I thought. I'm a more professional actor than I thought I was.
One of the things that I imagine, you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that when you're on Saturday Night Live, it is so compressed, so intense to make an entire show in a week that you are just constantly having to step out on stage with really high stakes and do some, do a dumb voice and talk about your kitty cat and hope that people like it, right? You have to do that over and over. And one of the big things about showing up to a job where you're going to work 3 days and you don't know anybody or whatever is every time you do that, if you're going to be successful at it, you have to have that same conviction. Like you have to go for it or it's not going to work.
Yeah. SNL is one of those places where you just like, it's that very simple question of like, all we're asking you is to be completely undeniably great, you know? And it's just like, oh, okay, got it. Like, you know, I saw a clip recently of, I don't even know what it was for, but it was Jack Nicholson winning some award. And I think he had something in him or something, like a couple in him or something. He just didn't have it. And he was like, Robin, who had also been nominated but lost to Jack Nicholson. He was like, Robin Williams. He was like, get up here. You're better at this. And then Robin Williams just gets up and destroys for 6 minutes straight. But it was like a sad moment where I was just like, a more powerful person pointed at Robin and said, you dance, monkey. And he was like, got it. And he was so undeniably prepared. But then they couldn't stop him. And then they're trying to go on and he's still going. And it's like watching, well, you brought the lion in. Now you want the lion to calm down. Like it was a fascinating thing to see as an adult, like see Robin Williams. Like, I don't know. It just hit me as like a, whoa, that was nuts. They just went like Jack Nicholson went like, get up here and dance. And it was weird. I don't know. It felt a lot like SNL.
Was there anything when you were working on those last two sitcoms that you wanted to ask John Larroquette or Ted Danson?
Yeah, but I got to ask them all of it because they're the best. They're the
what
greatest.
What were they? What did you want to ask them?
Well, I asked John Larroquette, I didn't have to ask anything because he just told great stories. And the short time that I had with him, he was very wonderful to me and just had, he was the kind of guy who you would just be like, what'd you do this? He'd be like, what'd you do this weekend? And I'd be like, I went to the Magic Castle. And he'd be like, oh, I once saw someone strangle Natalie Wood at the Magic Castle. And you're like, what? he just has fascinating stories. And Ted Danson was the opposite, where it was just like, dad. I felt like he was TV dad. Like he was just like, he was great. And
you just feel like I interviewed him like a year ago and yeah. I was just like, I guess he's just really got Ted Danson figured out. Like he feels so there and centered and calm.
Yeah, I learned that. I learned that like it's much better. I think SNL, I had a very chaotic energy. I realize my energy. There's sometimes like I see people who I haven't seen since I was on SNL and they're like, well, are you're so much slower now. And I'm like, yeah, no, it was a chaotic time. But Ted Danson's the guy that taught me like just every 2 hours, just have like some turkey and an apple. And I've said that in every interview, but that's the best thing I've learned from Ted Danson.
I mean, it's not something you could not do after Ted Danson tells you to,
yeah,
right?
Also, it's worked. It's fantastic. I'm great now.
I mean, you look gorgeous. Thanks. Just like Danson.
Thank you. I'm much taller.
Yeah, you look like you're getting a lot of fiber and sufficient protein.
I look like every single person from Cheers smashed together. That is not far off, I don't think.
was just sitting here thinking you had a Rhea Perlman quality.
I could play
quality.
Every single person on Cheers except for Ted Danson's part.
You'd make a great coach now that I think of it.
Coach, yeah. Soon? Yeah, I can't wait.
Do you think you could do...
Norm, Cliff.
Harry Anderson? Do you think you could be Harry Anderson?
Yeah. Yes. I know. I have a lot of magic and Meltor Mayfax.
Uh-huh. Wade,
well, Harry
Wade
Anderson,
Boggs,
was he
do you think
on?
You could do Wade? Yeah, he was on... He was recurring on Cheers.
As the judge from Night Court? Was it
as a magician who would wander into the bar and do... magic tricks.
But it wasn't the same. He didn't then become
no,
a judge.
I don't think it's an expansion of that.
I'm just
character.
Wanting
I think
that
he had a whole
so
life outside of Night Court.
I doubt it.
In general.
Doubt
both
it.
In terms of his work and his just his regular life.
Yeah.
I don't think he just... I think the Mel Torme thing was something they created for Night Court. I don't think...
I disagree. I think it was a real thing. And
really?
Harry's a real judge.
Really?
And everything from my childhood is real.
Okay. He was very funny. And Night Court was very funny.
Yeah, it was.
It'd be very funny... if that was a
Roz,
real
everybody
judge.
Was great.
I mean, I don't know that it seems like it would be inappropriate if he was a real judge.
Not at night. Night. It's Night Court, man. Anything goes. That was the whole point of the show.
Just because it's like a crazy version of a regular court?
Yeah, it's night. It's not day court. You get crazy at night.
I've only ever been to day court.
Yeah, exactly. See,
so I guess I didn't
You ever
know.
Go night bowling or they go like disco bowling?
Right. And there's all the lights. And
same
the,
thing.
Okay. And they play the music.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess because when I was at regular court, the bailiffs were...
All the bailiffs in Night Court are 9 feet tall and bald and hilarious.
Yeah, regular size bailiffs in Night Court. And full hair. And
yeah. They start off as old ladies, I think. And
not
then,
sassy at all.
And then all of a sudden become a giant man without any explanation.
Every time you have brought up Saturday Night Live, you have laced... the story with you have told it avuncularly, you have told it fondly, and you have dropped in terror about not being great all the time.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'll take that.
What's it like to live without that?
Without what?
Without the edge of...
Oh, it's fantastic, but it's also like... I think, like, even now, like, when you were saying that earlier, it's that, too. I'm on a podcast. I don't love talking about myself. When I was saying earlier, like, I would much rather come in here and say I'm Batman and do something stupid than go in here and be like, my book that's coming out is about sheep that, you know, and, like, it feels weird and different. That feels more vulnerable, I guess, to come do that. But especially when I talk about SNL and stuff, like, it's all so personal and strange. But then it's also like the second I mention somebody else's name, it's like, oh God, is that going to be a problem? Or, you know, it's all that comes with it. But also, I'm at a point where I go like, now where I go like, no, I loved SNL, but I realize now that like the reason why I was there for 9.5 years is because I was someone who could take a beating really well, like an emotional beating really well and keep moving on and keep doing it.
IRL or on screen?
Somebody who could just, I think one of the, my strong, I think it's, less about comedy at that place and just mentally surviving what the hell is happening. Like one day you're in a comedy club dreaming of something and then you're on a mechanical bull with Tom Hanks and you're like, huh? Like, what happened? Like, there's, I realize now that I was somebody that was conditioned to do that, to be able to go, hey, Jason can't make this. Get on live TV right now. Put on his suit and just go read those words. And you go, got it. And then afterwards you panic. And like that I was good at. I was good at just going and being funny because I didn't know any better.
Do you feel proud about it?
Yeah, super proud.
Stick around. More Bullseye around the corner from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Jasmine Morris here from the StoryCorps podcast. Our latest season is called My Way. Stories of people who found a rhythm all their own and marched to it throughout their lives. Consequences and other people's opinions be damned. You won't believe the courage and audacity in these stories. Hear them on the StoryCorps podcast from NPR.
If you're a business owner, you know these sounds mean sales. And from the sound of it, your business is growing. Whether you're fulfilling orders from your home office or warehouse, Stamps.com helps you stress less about mailing and shipping and spend more time doing what you love most. Listening to ASMR. I mean, growing your business. But as you grow, so does the need for efficiency. Stamps.com simplifies your shipping and mailing process. Import orders from wherever you sell online. Find the lowest rates with the fastest delivery times. Instantly deliver tracking updates to your customers. And buy shipping and mailing supplies when you run low. Save time and money on mailing and shipping. Get started at Stamps.com today with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale.
Oh my gosh, hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of the pop culture trivia podcast, Troubled Waters. On Troubled Waters, we play games like motivational speeches. It goes a little like this. Riley, give us an improvised motivational speech on why people should listen and subscribe to Troubled Waters.
I look around this ad and I see a lot of potential to listen to comedians such as Jackie Johnson and Josh Gondelman, and they need you to get out there and listen to them attempt to figure out sound rebus clues or determine if something is a Game of Thrones character or a city in Wales.
I have chills. I'm going to give you 15 points. All that and so much more on Troubled Waters. Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you choose to listen to podcasts.
This is Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm here with Bobby Moynihan of Saturday Night Live, DuckTales, and more. He's also the author of a new children's book, Not All Sheep Are Boring. Let's get back into our conversation.
If you had chaos energy when you were on Saturday Night Live, do you feel peaceful now?
I'm in, like, I just said this to my wife recently, which is like SNL, like there's that terrifying moment where you have to push the boat away from the shore and you're not sure if the boat's going to break. And I feel like I'm at the right about to get to the other side of that lake. And I didn't realize I was that close. Like, as far as, like, SNL goes, where, like, instead of, like, oh, my God, what am I going to write this week? Oh, my God, like, you know, what do they think of this? And, like, now I wake up and just go, like, look, we did it. Like, my kid's 5. This is great. I got a house. I'm going to go do this job. Like, this ain't so bad. This is nice. I'm enjoying this now. Like, instead of just panicking all the time.
When you have a child, you kind of have to learn how to, especially a small child, you have to learn how to be present in a way that you just can't keep running.
Since the moment my daughter was born, any problem I had at SNL seems extremely silly, and every problem at that time felt monumental and important. And now it's like, oh, I made it. I made it through that to get to here, I guess.
Are you at peace with the part of show business, which is that you?
This is getting so deep, and I am I at peace with show business?
I mean, if you want to do Batman,
I wrote
we can do
a
that
book
after.
About dumb sheep, sheep that are so boring they can't even keep a frog awake. And now, so I'm sorry. Ask me your question again.
Are you at peace with the part of show business where you don't know if you're going to have a job tomorrow?
That's funny that you say that. I mean, like, I was on Mr. Mayor and that got canceled, and that was a very unexpected thing for me. Not necessarily maybe unexpected. Yes, it was very unexpected. I was also very bummed. I loved working with those people. But it's the first time, you know, since SNL, like, I had a very long run where, you know, you have that main job, but then it's the first time where I can go, I've been able to go, you're on other cartoons and you're on like all this stuff, but there is definitely a time where it's not guaranteed. And that's a good reminder to have, because it was a fantasy. It was SNL fantasy camp. It was space camp for 10 years. And now it's family and life and reality.
But you'll always have your nature cat money.
Always. till the day I die. I kept it all. I keep it right next to Jay Leno's Tonight Show money.
It's about to make the same.
I bought the bank box next to his.
Never touched your Nature Cat no. money. Just live off the sitcom it. Money.
Yeah.
Well, Bobby Moynihan, thank you so much for taking all this time to talk to me. I've loved your work for so long. It's really nice to get to meet you and talk to you.
Thanks. Same here.
Bobby Moynihan. Thanks to Bobby for coming in and sharing so much with us. His new book is called Not All Sheep Are Boring. You can get it now from your local bookstore. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. We had a tropical storm in Los Angeles the other day. As if there wasn't enough evidence here that God is mad at us. Anyway, it turned out to be not that bad. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Tabitha Myers. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJ W, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation. It's by The Go Team. Thanks to The Go Team and to Memphis Industries, their label, Go Team, great band. Go check out their records. Bullseye is also on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Find us in all of those places. We share our interviews there. You can share them. Vents? I think that's right. Anyway, I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Osea. This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. They both come in giftable boxes with savings up to $46 and free shipping for a limited time. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.
On NPR's Throughline.
We cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt, because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.